What is up, bosses? Before we start this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor. It is Fundrise. Now, in 2021, a truly diversified portfolio needs more than just the traditional mix of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. You need to be in private real estate, and that's where Fundrise comes in. In fact, Johnny, Sam, and myself have all personally invested in Fundrise even before they were a sponsor of Invest Like a Boss. So if you want to check out Fundrise for yourself, I'm going to tell you more during the break, but get a head start. Go to fundrise.com/likeaboss. That's FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss. Now, on to this week's episode.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Welcome to episode 199 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm back home here in Los Angeles. It's super early my time. The sun hasn't even come up yet. Johnny, it's a little bit later. It's probably getting dark where you are. What's going on, man?
Yeah, it's autumn. I'm looking outside my window here in Kiev and leaves are falling. The temperature drops to 0 degrees almost at night. So it gets cold at night. I'm here with the hot tea in my Rick and Morty sweatshirt. I actually like it. I'm really enjoying this.
So 0 Celsius though, right? We should.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's cold. It's probably low 40s Fahrenheit.
I actually don't mind that temperature. Once it gets below 30s or 0 Celsius, it's a little too cold for me.
Yeah, it's going to get really cold here. It's going to get freezing. But this kind of middle section where it's cold at night to sleep, but during the day, the sun still comes up. It's actually very nice.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is here in LA too. It's it's getting cool at night, but then yesterday I went and I started my day. It was overcast. The marine layer was out. It was chilly. And then an hour later, I was sweating to death. It was 80 degrees in the sun. So.
Yeah, but the funny thing is when I lived in, especially in Southern California for, maybe 5 or 6 years, I enjoyed having summer year round, but now I start appreciating seasons again. I feel like when it's summer year round, you just put things off for sometimes literally years. You're like, I'll go to the beach next month, or I'll go to the mountains next month, or I'll do whatever next month. And this never comes around because you can always go.
Totally. And you really lose a sense of time. I mean, I equate when I grew up in Minnesota and you could equate what was going on outside. Was there snow? Was the leaves off the trees? But here in California, you're kind of that was just a couple of months ago. And then you look back and you're like, no, that was a year ago. It's just that everything stays the same. So it's really hard to get a sense of time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is why so many people live in climates with four seasons, not just because they happen to be born there or it's sometimes cheaper there. I think people actually like it. I used to think people that were insane who lived anywhere that would get cold when places like California existed. But now I actually appreciate it. I also understand why there are snowbirds who avoid it. But at the same time, I also, it is nice having the change of season.
Well, I think that ties in nicely with who we have on this episode, because you can always come back to California, Johnny, and just buy a piece of a house. That's all you got to do. We're talking to Picasso and they have these awesome listings, these beautiful homes all over the US, and now they're expanding internationally, and you don't have to buy the entire house because, coming from you, Johnny, you own multiple places now. You can't spend all your time in every place you own.
Yeah. Technically I have a second home in Kharkiv, which I haven't been to in probably 2 or 3 months. And I was actually kind of excited to go there for a few days or a week in between Airbnb bookings. But the guy decided he wanted to extend for another month. And I was a little bit, heartbroken, but I was like, you know what? It's money first, but yeah, I actually am looking forward to going there, trying again, my favorite restaurants and picking up some things and just kind of hanging out.
So would you classify your second home as primarily an investment, or were you really excited for the lifestyle opportunity to have an option?
Originally, it was actually a lifestyle thing because I had friends living there, but those two friends moved to Mexico for the winter. So now I don't really have that many friends there. So there's not really a big reason for me to go, but It is somewhere I wish I had a reason, like a actual reason to go there. But now it's really just an investment.
Cool. Well, I think Picasso is less of an investment and more of a lifestyle play, but I think still really interesting. So why don't we just get right into it, and then we'll talk in the outro of more about our experiences with second homes and how we feel about this service in general.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to kind of follow along, you can take a look at the listings at Picasso.com. It'll be in our show notes. But basically, it is a way to own a second home, like a $4 million home in, you know, Park City, Utah, or in Beckridge, Colorado, or Corona Del Mar, or, you know, any kind of cool places for a fraction of the price, literally, you know, an eighth of the price. So let's take a listen. And I have a lot to talk about in the outro. So let's go for it.
All right, here we go. This is Austin Allison. He's the CEO of Picasso. This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Fundrise. Now, in 2021, a truly diversified portfolio needs to include private real estate. That's where Fundrise comes in. Fundrise provides access to diversified portfolios of private real estate to all investors, whether you're accredited or not, with their industry-leading, easy-to-use platform. Whether you're looking to add some stable cash flow via dividends or you prefer long-term growth, Fundrise makes it easy as investing in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. Now, I personally use Fundrise as well. It's so easy. Every single week, I add to my account, and they send me updates about all these projects that they're in. Whether it's big or small, you get to find out about these deals, and it's really cool. It makes you feel a part of the process, yet you don't have to do any of the tough work. So it's like a win-win situation. So if you want to see for yourself how 150,000 investors have built a better portfolio with private real estate, it just takes a second to get started. Go to fundrise.com/likeaboss. That's fundrise.com/likeaboss. I'll spell it out for you. FUNDRISE.com/likeaboss. All right. I am joined here with the CEO of Picasso. It's a new way to buy shares in a second home. So we heard about this. I think I got this sent a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, all right, we got to talk to them because this sounds really interesting. So welcome to the show. He's the CEO of Picasso, Austin Allison.
Thank you, Derek. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us, Austin. This is a really cool concept, and I think it's going to really resonate with our listeners because our listeners are all over the world, traveling everywhere, bouncing from one place to the next, you know, Airbnb, whatever it may be. But this is a chance to own a piece of a second home that can really feel like yours, but I think you don't have to deal with all the hassles of, you know, I got to get it repainted. The plumbing has issues, things like that. So why don't you tell us how Picasso came to be and what was the inspiration for it?
Yeah, happy to do it. So let me start with the inspiration. So I've been in real estate pretty much my whole life and built a company and sold it to Zillow about 5 years ago and stayed on at Zillow for about 4 years. So I've sort of been around real estate in some form or fashion for a long time. And 7 or 8 years ago, my wife and I were fortunate enough to become second homeowners in Lake Tahoe. And it was a really life-changing experience for us that because we didn't just buy a second home, we bought a second community. We met new friends, we developed these rituals and built memories that are now really important to our family and who we are. And I wanted to find a way to make that dream possible for more people because second homes tend to be very expensive. They're often located in very expensive markets and they're highly underutilized. The average second home sits vacant for 10 to 11 months per year. And so Picasso exists to address that problem and that market opportunity through this new category of ownership that we're pioneering called co-ownership. And the easiest way to get your mind around co-ownership is imagine, Derek, if you and 4 or 5 of your friends decided to buy a house together in your dream second home destination. Picasso works in the exact same way, except for you don't have to know the other people because we aggregate the group of owners. We manage every detail from designing the home to furnishing the home to paying the bills so that you can just show up at your second home that you own and enjoy it with none of the hassle or headaches.
You know what? I'm really glad I'm doing this interview because I've actually been looking for a second home myself recently, and I live in Los Angeles and prices are insane, as you are aware. So I think this is actually something that I'd be personally interested in as well, too. And I'm really glad to hear that you worked for Zillow, because I bet if you look at my phone and the top apps used, Zillow is going to be in the top 10. I'm on that like every day.
Yeah, it's pretty addicting. You got to download the Picasso app as well. And I think it'll make it right up there to the top, hopefully three. It's a pretty exciting thing. Yeah, second homes are a dream for many.
Awesome. I just made a note to download that, actually. So let's talk about the process of buying a Picasso home. So first of all, before we really get into that, what would you say to someone who says, oh, you know, this just sounds like a timeshare? How does this differ from a timeshare?
Yeah, it's quite different than a timeshare. And there are a number of reasons why. But I would say that the two most obvious reasons are, first and foremost, Picasso homes are residential single family homes, whereas timeshares are hotels and commercial resorts. And there's a big difference there. One has hundreds of rooms and, you know, thousands of people who occupy the commercial hotel on an annual basis, versus our residential single family homes occupy just like a primary home, except for there's just a couple of families throughout the year who rotate usage. The second big difference, though, is with Picasso, you're buying real estate, not time. And, you know, one of the examples that I like to use on this front is, let's say that you had bought into a timeshare program with a leading, you know, hotel chain, and fast forward a couple of years and the hotel chain goes out of business. You have nothing left except for a piece of paper, because you didn't really own any real estate. You just bought into a program to use the hotel room for a week per year. In this model, you actually own real estate. So, you know, if you buy a Picasso and then Picasso goes out of business 3 years from now, you and a small group of owners own a house. You could go sell that house. You could find another property manager to manage the house. So it really is fundamentally different in the sense that it's like comparing a real property asset to a liability.
That's great to know. And just for you to know, Austin, we've never recommended a timeshare on Invest Like a Boss, and we never will. So it's good to hear that. I want to talk about, as far as the ownership aspect goes, your site says that once a sale goes through and all the shares are purchased through a home, that Picasso has no ownership in that actual home. So why don't you run us through the revenue of how Picasso gets paid? Are you making a commission off the sale initially?
We charge a service fee for the service that we provide, and it's baked into the price of every Picasso. So if you go to our website, which everybody who's listening, you should check out our website and download our app. It's pacaso.com. But if you find a home on our website, let's say it's a beautiful home and Malibu for $500,000. Within that $500,000 is a service fee that's about 10% of the total price. And that's how we earn our revenue on the front end. So all the work that we do to find the property, aggregate the co-owners, market the property, put together the legal framework and the operating agreement. We also guarantee the loan for anybody who uses financing. All of that is covered in our service fee up front. And then once the home is sold to all of its owners, as you mentioned, we no longer own any of the property. So we the way that it works is we identify properties that are of interest to our buyers. We get those properties under contract, and then we aggregate the group of co-owners to purchase the property. But once 100% of the home is spoken for, Picasso is effectively just the property manager. We don't retain any ownership in the home. The owners own 100% of the property.
Okay, great. But before that goes through, Picasso owns 100% of the property, correct?
Correct. Although usually some of the property is pre-sold before we buy. So like, you know, let's say, for example, that, you know, we've got millions of people that come to our website, you know, and those people tell us what they're looking for in a second home. So before we ever get a home under contract, we already know what our owners are looking for. So think of us like the, you know, almost like the real estate agent in a way, for the buyers who are looking to find a property. We go out and find the right home, and then we aggregate the co-owners. So by the time we close on a property, there's generally a handful of the interests have already been pre-sold. So usually we own part of the property in partnership with some of the other owners. And then over a period of a couple of months, we aggregate the other co-owners. And once all owners are aggregated, then we retain no ownership from that point forward.
Okay, great. I'm glad you mentioned agents. So let's say I'm interested in a property. How about in Malibu? Because that's right down the street and it's gorgeous. What if I want to bring in my own real estate agent? Am I allowed to do that?
Oh, absolutely. Not only are you allowed to, you know, you're encouraged to. I mean, we partner with real estate agents in every market. I mentioned when I was providing that example of us kind of like the real estate agent, what I meant by that is that we go out and we work with our real estate agent partners to find the right properties that meet the needs of our buyers who are visiting our website. But real estate agents who are working with buyers and sellers all day long, you know, are our partners. So, you know, many of the buyers who come to Picasso actually find out about Picasso through their real estate agent. So yeah, absolutely. You know, if your real estate agent's not familiar with Picasso yet, feel free to introduce us to them. And real estate agents love to work with us because we try to make the process really easy. And they also earn commissions on every Picasso that they sell in the same way that they would a whole home.
Awesome. So obviously, I'm assuming that you're able to view the house in person before purchase, but you know, some of these are second homes at different markets and an owner might not have time to go check them out. What's the policy? I'm picturing, like, let's say a traditional owner, if you say, oh, I got 8 different people that want to buy your house, and it just sounds like a mess, like logistically, just to actually even look at the house.
So some people do choose to look at the property in person. I would say as time goes on, I think, you know, more and more people will buy virtually. I mean, the technologies to tour virtually and experience the home and the location are so advanced now, you know, from Matterport to Google Earth to FaceTime video tours and all the other things that we do to enable people to experience the home from afar. You know, we're at a point now where a lot of people will buy the house without ever seeing it in person. The other thing that's pretty important to note about Picasso is that, you know, it's very easy to kind of move in and out of properties if you wish. Now, most people don't, because most people fall in love with their home. You know, it's kind of human nature, whether it's a primary home or secondary home. Once you start occupying your home, we as humans tend to get pretty emotionally attached to the home and the location. Sure. But, you know, if you were, for example, to buy a home in Malibu that was, you know, you didn't see in person, and then you use the home for the first couple of months, and then you decided, you know what, like, you'd really prefer a home in La Jolla instead of Malibu, we make that process really easy for you. You can effectively just, you know, call Picasso and we'll take your Malibu home in on trade and allow you to transfer for the same amount that you paid for your Malibu home. We'll allow you to take your home equity, transfer it to another property in another location. And I think that convenience and flexibility also makes it really easy for people to, you know, take the step of second home ownership without necessarily seeing the home in person for the first time.
Oh, that's really cool. So let's say, is there a minimum hold time on that transfer policy? So let's say I get the Malibu place and, you know, within 30 days, I just go, this is the wrong place. I need to go somewhere else. Is there a minimum hold time on that?
No, there's not a minimum hold. There is a maximum, which is 1 year. So we basically allow you to transfer anytime, no questions asked, for what you paid for the first year. After the first year, it would be at fair market value. So if the property goes up in value, you know, you would get the fair market value less our transaction fee to trade in. If the property goes down in value, then it would be valued at that as well. But anytime in the first year, we lock in what you paid and you can transfer that, no questions asked.
Great. That's a really cool feature. Now, your site says you can buy as little as 1/8 of a home. You sell them in shares. Now, can you potentially buy more than 1/8, or is it just one share per person?
You are allowed to buy multiple shares. We cap the number at 4, though. And the reason why is because 4 shares is obviously 50%. And if somebody's buying 50% of a home, we would just recommend that you buy the whole home, because that's the point in time where, you know, the you're using the home enough that it probably makes sense for you to own the whole thing. Where Picasso really is operates at a sweet spot is for people who intend to use their home more than once a year, but less than 5 months a year. And that happens to be most second homeowners, because the average second home is used about 5 weeks per year. So if you fall into that, you know, category of usage, Picasso is a great fit. But again, more than 50% of the year, we'd recommend that you just go buy the whole home.
Yeah, definitely. I think that 1/8 is a really sweet spot there. So let me ask you this. You kind of alluded to this earlier with your 10% transaction fee at the sale. So let's say I take all 8 of these shares of any particular home, add them together and add your fee in, or including your fee, I guess, because your fee is inclusive of that. What kind of value are we looking at with 8 shares of a home compared to just buying the home outright? What kind of price difference are we looking at?
Well, we add a 12% service fee on top of the cost of the home. And that works out to about a 10.5% margin. So mathematically, if you add 12%, it works out to about 10.5% of the total purchase price. So when you look at a home, like if we buy a home for $4 million, and you add up the total of all the individual 1/8 interest and get the sum, the difference in the purchase price and the total summed price is Picasso's service fee plus furniture. And because when we buy a home, we buy it empty. But when we get the empty home, we design it, we furnish it with, you know, state-of-the-art finishes and fixtures. And then that's included in the final price. So that's one difference in buying a Picasso when compared to buying a normal home, is you're buying a home that includes furniture, whereas with a normal home, you would be adding the furniture after the fact.
Okay, great. We're going to bring that up in a little bit here too. I just want to get to one more thing into the buying process. Your site claims that once owners, you know, buy all the proper shares and the house is fully owned, that they get entered into a property LLC. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, you bet. So LLC ownership is a very common ownership structure. And in fact, in most second home markets, it's not uncommon to see 10 or 20% of all homes in the market owned in an LLC or similar type of entity, like a trust or some other form of entity. And there are many reasons why people own properties in LLCs, but I would say the main reasons are privacy, limited liability protection, and then the flexibility of ownership. And what I mean by flexibility is with an LLC, you can have multiple people own the property. So like if you were to go do this on your own and buy a property with a couple of your friends, the best way for you to structure that would be through an LLC, whereby the LLC owns the home and each of the owners own through their LLC agreement. And that's how Picasso works. So every home is titled under the LLC, and then every owner is has their ownership through the LLC agreement. And when somebody goes to resell their interest at a future date, it's a more efficient process because we're able to just transfer their interest through the LLC framework, as opposed to having to go through the full-blown title and recording process each time a home transacts.
Right. So any future owners, if you want to sell your shares, would have to enter into this LLC, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Got it. All right. So even though you own the house outright between shares among multiple owners, you still have to abide by Picasso rules. So I really want to get into this. There's quite a few rules, but I think we can do them really quick. Most of them make sense, but there's a couple that I think our listeners are definitely going to have questions about. The first one particularly. So these are all straight from your site. The first rule just says Picasso homes are designed solely for the personal use and enjoyment of owners and their personal guests. This is the part I want to get to, though. Rental of Picasso homes is strictly prohibited. So no Airbnb, no short-term rentals. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's basically just as it reads is our policy. We don't allow any rental activity to happen in the homes. We view that while that may not appeal to some of your investor oriented audience here, the audience that we're serving, which are people who aspire to own second homes for their own personal use and enjoyment really appreciate the fact that no rentals are allowed in their home. And the reason why is because, you know, renters tend to treat things like renters. They're transient occupants that don't have skin in the game. They have no ties to the community. They tend to, and, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes around Airbnb guests. And not all those stereotypes are unfounded. You know, like it is true that many Airbnb guests wreak havoc on homes and neighborhoods and communities. And that's very different than the type of owner that we're serving. We're serving, you know, families who are really interested in owning a second home. They're interested in being part of the community. They're interested in getting to know the neighbors and being respectful of, you know, the rules of the neighborhood. And in this case, in the home. So we just come right out and sort of hardwired into the agreement that absolutely no rentals are allowed in Picasso homes. So occasionally we'll get people that, you know, will come to Picasso and be interested in like a rental investment, where they'll come in and talk to one of our sales reps and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in buying one of these homes and then renting it out when I don't use it. And we just tell them, you know, Picasso is not a good fit for you. This isn't a rental investment program. This is a program for people who want to own and enjoy second homes for their own benefit. That being said, you know, you do own real estate, and this is real estate in pretty iconic locations, you know, Malibu, Aspen, Napa, Tahoe, Miami, you know, and many people believe that, including, you know, real estate economists and stuff like that, believe that these iconic second home destinations will appreciate in value over time as they have in the past. And to the extent that that's true, the owners of the home realize all the benefit of those capital gains, because at the end of the day, they own the property.
Sure. That makes sense. And I think that's a good point to talk about, you know, the actual investment over time with this, where I know a lot of our listeners would definitely be interested in Airbnb being something, but we've all had our fair share of Airbnb horror stories as well. The next few are pretty self-explanatory. No events or large party, quiet hours from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. and no more than two dogs. That's all pretty self-explanatory. I do want to bring up, since you had asked about it. So let's take this instance where I couldn't make it to my property, but I have some friends that I'd like to send there, or some business clients that I'd like to put up in Malibu for a week. Is something like that possible when the actual owner is not in attendance?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and that works just like if you own a normal second home, you know, like if you own the second home outright and your brother or friend or cousin, you know, you want to host them at your property, you absolutely have every right to do that. But you're not allowed to rent it out. You're not allowed to charge them for that. You're not allowed to put it on Airbnb. And your registered guests have to register through our app and obey the same rules of the home as you would obey as an owner. And I think one thing that's important to distinguish about second home ownership compared to like an Airbnb is people visiting their second home are not on vacation. You know, like when I go to my second home in Lake Tahoe, I'm not on vacation.
There's stuff to do. I mean,
you know, it's like you're just at your second home. You're doing all the same things you do at your primary home. You're working from home. You're, you know, frequenting, you know, your local restaurants. I mean, there's something that's very different about an owner who is committed to a property and to a community long term, that frequents the home, you know, multiple times throughout the year, when compared to like if I were to go to Hawaii. For example, I haven't been to Hawaii in 10 years. It's not a place that I go to very often. So if I were going to go to Hawaii, it'd probably be a better fit for me to just rent a hotel or rent an Airbnb. Whereas I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. So Lake Tahoe, which is a couple hundred miles away, you know, that's a place I go to more often. And I like to have a second home there because it enables me to really be part of that community and frequent the same home on a regular basis and keep my stuff there and, you know, participate in ownership in a market that I really believe in and much, much more.
Great. I just want to touch on two more points because I feel like there's got to be a story behind this one. It says Picasso owners are strongly encouraged to avoid parking on the street unless absolutely necessary. I feel like you had some neighbor complaints about cars or something there.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely had neighbors complain, whether you own the whole home or 1/8 of the home, there will always be a neighbor or more that will complain about something. And what the reason why this is in here is because I would say that there are a few sort of pet peeves that, you know, apply to all neighbors. This isn't unique to co-ownership, but this is just in general. And I would say it's parking, garbage, and noise. You know, on the parking front, people don't like seeing their streets cluttered with extra cars. For whatever reason, that just tends to rub some people the wrong way.
Oh yeah, so I have neighbors that think they own the street, and you're taking their personal parking spot.
Yeah, totally. And you know, so that's one. The other one I think is garbage. You know, it's just if you leave your garbage out, it tends to, you know, annoy people. And I would say the third thing is noise. You know, people like their quiet time after respectable hours. So we just make sure that we're putting in a framework and a set of rules that just remind our owners, you know, what the rules of engagement are to ensure that, you know, we're respectful and good neighbors. So I wouldn't say there hasn't been an instance where there was a bunch of parking on the street that caused us to implement this rule. It was more of a proactive thing that we did, you know, because through a lot of research and, you know, personal experiences and feedback, we've learned that parking, garbage, and noise are, you know, three top things that neighbors care about. So we made sure to hardwire that into the rules.
Definitely makes sense. Last one I want to touch on. It says no part of a Picasso home may be used for commercial purposes. So I can't start my surf school in Malibu, but I think you're pretty safe to work from home, I assume, right?
Yeah, you're totally safe to work from home. But this is another one that, you know, I can't remember if this one was added after the fact or something that we put in right out of the gate. But, you know, we don't want people using it. It's kind of like the rental program. You know, like we don't want people renting the home. We don't want people setting up, you know, barber shops or,
for sure.
Whatever you might do out of a home. So we wired that into there as well.
Sounds great. Let's move on to maintenance of these homes. So once you buy them, you got to maintain them, of course. And that's where Picasso comes in. It sounds like you'll handle everything. And basically you can just enjoy the home and not have to worry about a lot of these things. So why don't we start off with what kind of fees that Picasso is taking to handle all the maintenance of these homes?
Yeah, so we do handle all maintenance, you know, everything from like routine maintenance to repairs. It's a pretty thorough process. And it starts with budgeting. So at the beginning of each year, we prepare a budget for the home. And within the budget, we anticipate maintenance items that would need to be taken care of. So if, for example, you know, the furnace is on its last leg and maybe has a couple years of life left, we would recognize that and we would start to plan for it by accruing a budget so that by the time the furnace breaks, we've got money in there to repair the furnace. In terms of what fees we charge for this, so basically all the costs associated with operating the home, everything from maintenance to insurance to taxes, utilities, all of those things contribute to the annual budget. So let's say, for example, that, you know, a $4 million home might cost, I don't know, if you were to do the whole home, it might cost somewhere in the like $6,000 to $10,000 a month range to operate a home like that, depending on the market and the tax rates and insurance costs and stuff like that. So one of the beauties of Picasso's ownership model is if you only own 1/8 of the home, you don't have to pay all $10,000 a month. You only have to pay 1/8 of that, right? Your pro rata share of what you actually own. Within that annual operating budget, Picasso just charges a modest fee of $100 per 1/8 interest per month. And all the other costs are passed through at cost with no markup. So if it costs, you know, $10,000 a year to insure the property, then the owners are going to pay their pro rata share of $10,000 a year. Picasso's not adding fees on top of that.
Okay, great. I like that. So let me give you this scenario. Let's say Picasso comes in January 1st and they say, you know what? The roof looks like it's on its last legs. In the next couple of years, we're going to need to replace that. So we're going to put some money aside for that. Now, I come in as a fractional owner and I say, you know what? I think the roof is just fine. It doesn't need replacing. Is there any kind of dispute over that? Or do all owners have to agree to what Picasso assesses?
So if there were a big item like that, that existed right out of the gate when we bring the home onto the platform, we recognize those things and we build budget in upfront. So like if we knew the roof, for example, would need to be replaced within the next couple of years, we would actually build that into the purchase price upfront so that the owners aren't surprised, you know, 2 years from now with a giant, you know, roof replacement bill. So we make these decisions on a case-by-case basis. And when you purchase a property, if there were a big accrual for something like that, it would be part of the paperwork and the budget, and you would see it in your initial purchase. In terms of owners and the way that they weigh into these decisions, in general, the way to think about it is this co-ownership group is effectively hiring Picasso as the manager of this property on their behalf. And they're providing Picasso with discretion to maintain the home to the standard that's been specified. So something like a roof that needs to be replaced in 2 years, they would know from the moment that they buy into the home that there's budget in the account for the roof and that it's going to be replaced within the next 2 years. So there wouldn't be like a conversation or a vote on something like that. It would already be planned in advance. If, however, there were something that was out of the ordinary, like let's say, for example, that you know, one of the owners decides that they think that a fourth or fifth bedroom should be converted into a bunk room for kids as opposed to the current setup that has a king bed.
Okay.
Something like that would be brought to the attention of the Picasso home manager. Then the Picasso home manager would solicit feedback from the other owners in the ownership group. If the other owners in the ownership group wanted to also have a bunk room, then we would convert it. But if the other owners don't want a bunk room, then it stays as a king room per the specifications that were originally outlined when they bought the home in the first place.
Okay, well, good to know that there's an option to maybe change, you know, and then it's left up to a vote. So I like that. Are shareholders able to communicate with each other? Let's say we both own shares in a home. And am I able to call you up directly, Austin, or do we have to go through Picasso for everything?
Owners go through Picasso for everything. And that is, you know, by design. And that's part of the benefit of the service, because one of the many flaws associated with trying to do this on your own is that owners struggle to reach an agreement on all these little details. So, you know, if you just Google search, you know, own a luxury second home with a friend, you'll probably find a number of articles that talk about how friends tried to do this on their own and they end up enemies by the end of the experience.
Definitely.
Because all these little decisions from maintenance to design, you know, it's hard to get a group of people to agree on those things. So a big part of the benefit here of having Picasso as the intermediary is we eliminate that friction, right? There are no instances where owners are like debating back and as a general rule, there aren't instances where owners are like debating over, you know, what kind of art we're going to put on the wall or what kind of refrigerator we replace the broken one with. These are all things that Picasso has been sort of hired to do on behalf of the ownership group. The other thing that I would add that's pretty interesting is that, you know, most of our owners, not all, but most of our owners actually prefer to remain anonymous because they like the privacy and the anonymity associated with that sort of arm's length relationship. And they like the idea that Picasso is the one sort of in the middle dealing with all these little details that would create frustration in a world where owners are trying to do this on their own.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to have Picasso as a mediator. And I got to assume at, you know, prices at houses at this level, even if it's fractional ownership, that you do have some pretty high profile clients as well that want to stay more anonymous.
Totally. Yeah.
So we already kind of answered the next question that you are able to exit a home early with your shares if you'd like. But what about this scenario? Let's say someone loves the house so much, but they only own one eighth of it. And they just say, I want to buy the whole house outright. Is that possible?
I guess it's theoretically possible, but practically speaking, No, because the way, because generally the other owners love their home too.
Sure.
So the only way one owner would be able to buy out all the other owners is if all the other owners wanted to sell. But generally speaking, the way that it works is when somebody wants to sell, they just, you know, call Picasso and tell us they're ready to sell. It works just like a normal real estate transaction with one exception, which is that the other owners in the ownership group have a right of first refusal. So let's say that you had bought your Malibu Picasso for $500,000. And then a year later, you decide you want to sell. The market was hot. The real estate went up in value. So now you decide you want to sell for $600,000. First thing we would do is we would notify the other owners and they would have a right to buy your interest for $600,000. If none of the other owners exercise that right, we then sell it to a new owner through our marketplace. And by our marketplace, I'm also talking about through the normal, you know, real estate agent community and marketplace as well. So our listings get syndicated on our website, but as well as all of our partner agent websites, you know, in all the markets where we operate.
Cool. It's good to know that the current owners actually get a first right of refusal on that as well. So we've all heard the old adage that, you know, buy the ugliest house on the block and get the best investment. But Picasso kind of seems to be doing the opposite. You're buying the biggest kind of best houses in an entire neighborhood, which is obviously it's going to be a vacation home. So you want that great grand home at a discount price when you're buying a fractional share of it. But how does this speak to the investment growth of when you eventually want to sell the property?
Well, first thing I would note is just reiterating the fact that this is not an investment like for like rental income. People should not, the motivation for buying a Picasso should not be because you want to make money. The motivation to buy a Picasso should be because you want to own a second home, but you want to do it responsibly because you either can't afford or can't justify owning 100% of an expensive home that you're only going to use 10% of the time. So that's anytime somebody asks about investing, we just start with that disclaimer that there are better ways to make money if that's your sole motivation. All that being said, you are purchasing real estate. And, you know, if you make good real estate purchases, the real estate generally goes up in value over time, like if you look historically. So I personally am bullish on second home markets over the long haul. And the reason why is because there is a shortage of supply and an abundance of demand. Following the pandemic, there are now, you know, millions and millions of additional families who have the freedom and flexibility to work remote, either part-time or full-time. And many of those families are now, you know, sort of migrating their demand to second home markets. So I don't really see a path where supply will catch up with demand in second home markets over the long haul because it's just too expensive and restrictive to build. I mean, we're already 5 million homes short as a country. We're 5 million new construction homes short from meeting the US demand in general. And when you look at that dynamic in second home markets, you'll see even more of an imbalance. There's just way more demand than supply. And generally speaking, when you have more demand than supply, prices go up over time. So I do think that real estate prices will go up in second home markets over time. So if you're interested in owning a second home to use it, and you're bullish on, you know, the market for the reason that I mentioned, and the property goes up in value, you will realize all of those gains. But again, investing shouldn't be your primary motivation with this purchase.
Yeah, definitely more of a lifestyle play. I really like everything we've talked about so far. If you don't mind, before we wrap up, we do have some questions from our Patreon group. We usually allow them the chance to ask the questions, just a few of them if you want to run over those quick.
Absolutely.
Sure. So Sophie, shout out from iLab Patreon, asks, well, first of all, she asked if we could do Airbnb. We already shut all that down. I knew that would come up, though. and she also asked, can non-US citizens purchase property shares through Picasso?
Yes. So we do have a kind of a standard KYC and sort of background check process, but yeah, it doesn't prohibit non-US citizens from purchasing a Picasso. And actually, we actually have Picassos now available beyond the US as well. So we're expanding into Europe as we speak. The first market that we've announced is Spain. And in the very near future, you'll start to see Spain properties on our website. And we expect that a lot of, you know, European citizens and UK citizens will be purchasing those properties as well.
Awesome. That actually brings me to our next question from Mark Silberman in our Patreon. He actually asked, what other new locations that you're considering? Because right now from the site, I don't think you have Spain live yet, but there's the really hot markets that you'd expect in the US as vacation markets. Anywhere else in the US that particularly looks good to expand in, or anywhere beyond Spain and Europe?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many amazing markets. We're just getting started. We started the company about a year ago, and we're moving really quickly. We're in about 25 destinations around the US now, places like, you know, throughout Southern California, Northern California, Colorado, Utah, Florida, there's a bunch of other really obvious markets. Basically, just imagine all the places where people want to own second homes. And those are our Picasso markets. Beyond the US, I already mentioned Spain, but there's a bunch of other obvious markets throughout Europe. Again, just imagine all the places where people either own or talk about owning second homes. And those are Picasso markets, as well as Mexico and the Caribbean are on our near-term roadmap.
Awesome. Looking forward to checking some of those out. This one we kind of touched on. I think we should get a little deeper in it, though. He asks, what is Picasso doing to handle some of the controversies in some locations they have purchased properties? Any backlash from the local communities?
Yeah. So anytime you have a new idea, you meet resistance. Doesn't matter what it is, you know. So we definitely expected some resistance. The resistance that we've heard in Napa is the community where we've experienced this. I would say it's based on a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding around the nature of this concept. The first big misunderstanding is around housing affordability. A lot of people in second home markets, rightfully so, are concerned about home price appreciation because home prices have been increasing at a rate that's unsustainable in many of these markets. And, you know, we don't want to do anything to further increase the rate at which home prices are growing because it makes it hard for locals to be able to afford homes. So there is some misconception that Picasso actually drives up home prices in local communities, but it's actually not true. And the reason why it's not true is, first off, we buy luxury homes. We're not buying median priced or affordable homes. Our average home price is $4 million, which in Napa, the community where the backlash was, is about 4 to 5 times the median in that market. But the second thing is co-ownership is actually good for communities. It's actually good for housing affordability. It's good for the environment because we're consolidating demand into fewer homes. We're taking people who would have otherwise been buying median price homes at that, you know, in Napa would be the $800,000 range. And we're moving them into luxury homes because with Picasso, you know, $800,000 will buy you a $5 or $6 million home. So one of the many things that people love about this model is that it enables them to sort of up level their buying power and move into a different tier of home. So over time, we think that co-ownership will actually help to alleviate a lot of the pressure on housing by making better use out of these empty homes and consolidating demand away from the median tier into luxury price homes. But, you know, it'll take time for the model to be understood at scale. And we're just early in that process.
Yeah, for sure. And that actually just got me thinking about one thing I want to touch on that I totally forgot about until now. I want to say about a year ago or so, we had a company called Equity Estates on, which provides luxury vacation homes for really high end, you know, business CEOs, things of that nature. But you don't actually own a piece of the home. So, but this is where my question comes in: is you're buying ownership in a luxury home. Now, these level of people usually expect luxury services. So, Equity Estates would you know, they'll fill up your fridge, they'll beer, drinks, whatever you want, transportation, a concierge service. Is there any additional services like that come with a Picasso home?
Today, we don't offer concierge services of that nature. I do suspect we will in the future at some point, but it's not something that we promise today. Today, the main way to think about the value proposition today is that this is a smarter, more financially and socially responsible way to own a second home with none of the hassle. You know, at the end of the day, you still own the home. You know, it's not a five-star hotel. You know, we don't offer room service or you know, massages in the home or you know, even stocking of refrigerators. But we do offer a much smarter and better way to own a second home with none of the hassle.
Awesome. I think you should look into it though, coming in the future. Cause
totally. Absolutely agree. But you know, it's a function of time. We're growing just so quickly. What's most important is that we deliver consistently for our owners on, you know, the basic service level and make Picasso available in as many markets as possible. But at some point in the future, for sure, I think it's very likely that we'll have other services.
All right. I like it. Sounds like you guys are crushing it, Austin. Thank you so much for being on Invest Like a Boss. Now, you mentioned the Picasso app. I'm assuming that's iPhone, Android, available anywhere. And Picasso.com is your website. Where should people go to check these things out? Or maybe just, you know, do what I do and just hang out and look at cool homes all day.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, you mentioned it, Derek. It's our website. And again, the spelling is Pacaso.com. Or our app. I mean, I really recommend downloading the app because you can start to save homes, get notifications. You can just do more on the app than you can on the website. But either place will get you what you need. And yeah, it's a pretty fun and addicting experience to look at beautiful homes and kind of imagine yourself realizing your dreams sooner than maybe it would have been possible before. So. Yeah, that's what I'd recommend. And thanks again for having me on the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Once again, his name is Austin Allison. He's the CEO of Picasso and it is spelled Pacaso. Austin, thank you so much. Awesome interview. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Derek.
All right, Derek, I want to ask you, if you were to buy one of the available houses right now, and you can only choose one, which one would it be?
There is a sick Malibu listing on there right now, and I know exactly where it is. It's on this road called Malibu Road. So I'm sure you're pretty familiar with Malibu. So Malibu has one main road called the Pacific Coast Highway, and there's these crazy houses all along it on the beach. But the problem is your front yard is a freeway. So there's only one road, and technically only one main road in Malibu that is super quiet and off of the freeway. And that's where the real ballers live. And they actually have a house on that road. And Kanye just moved in next door. So it would
wow.
be interesting.
Wow. How much is that share?
I got to look it up. I saw it earlier, but
it's going to be like a million for your share.
Yeah. I think it was actually, it might've been closer to 2 million.
Wow. But you know, what's funny is I've actually never been to Malibu, believe it or not.
What?
Even though, yeah, I lived in LA for maybe 5 years. It was just one of those places that felt like, you know, I didn't belong. I wasn't allowed to go.
Oh, no.
It seemed a little bit out of the way. You know what I mean?
Well, it is out of the way. I'll give you that. But it's worth the drive. And Malibu's so big. It's 30 miles of shoreline. So you could be driving for an hour and still be in Malibu. I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah. And what's crazy is I was watching some surf videos in California or, you know, on YouTube, but based in California. And I was like, where is this? This is amazing. And of course it was the boo.
The boo. Yeah. I mean, if I had something like that though, and I live in Venice right now, which is, you know, 20 minutes from there, I would have my primary home somewhere else, I guess. It'd be weird to have a vacation home 30 minutes away, but then again, yeah. it is LA. So it could be a long drive anyways.
Yeah, definitely could be. I mean, for me, I would absolutely have my Picasso home in Malibu just as an excuse to go there, you know, maybe to surf, but also, you know, it's a way to own property in California without maybe owning property, you know, without having your residence there.
Yeah. Oh, that's true as far as the tax basis too. If we want to look at it from an investment point of view, there's one thing I forgot to mention with Austin that I actually followed up with an email with them afterwards. I forgot to mention how you book your dates. So I guess within the app, you can actually choose the dates and they have technology to balance it out. So it's really fair for everyone. So if you own a quarter of a house, you can't just take the whole summer and say, oh, this is my beach house. Cause that even though technically you might get the same the one quarter amount of time, if you're getting all prime dates in that time, you know, you're kind of screwing the other owners. So I guess they have a balanced system that kind of works itself out where some days are considered better than others and everyone kind of gets an equal shot at time.
Yeah. I took a look at the FAQ and it was, you know, it was pretty good about that. Like you can, you know, they have major kind of holidays or, you know, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, things like that you can only book one at a time. So that way everybody gets at least one kind of special date. They call it special date, right? And you can, so every year, like you're guaranteed at least one special date and it changes every year. And also, you know, you can't just go and book like the best dates for the next 2-3 years up front. Like you can only book kind of, I think one or two stays up front and each stay I think is only for 2 weeks or something like that. So it's one of those, it's a nice kind of a blend of forced kindness to your other, like your other shareholders.
Yeah, I think it's really smart. So the only thing I kind of worry about this a little bit is prices are already like so crazy as it is. And the fact that they're baking in, you know, a 12% service fee and additional money on top of the price, even though you are buying just a piece of this huge house, it's still, from an investment standpoint, it's going to take a while to get that money back. What do you think about that?
Well, I like how he actually straight up said, this is not like an investment. Like it's like, it is, you know, it is and it's not, right? It's, and right. You know, he was like, there's better places to just invest money. This is for someone who actually wants to have a second home. I think of this as a non-crappy timeshare. You know, it's a way to be able to force yourself to actually go on vacation and to enjoy, you know, the perks of having a second home, somewhere that you can bring friends, you can entertain, you can gift it to, coworkers or clients, but actually have it potentially grow in value. And for sure, you know, you're not just stuck with a timeshare that nobody wants and it's impossible to schedule or get rid of.
Oh, it's so much better than a timeshare. Like I said, you know, don't ever do a timeshare. And I also like the fact that if you don't like it, they'll get you into another house. You know, you can't just say, I want all my money back, but you could say, maybe I hate Malibu. I don't want to be here and I want to be in the mountains. I want to be in Utah or the Caribbean or wherever it may be. They'll actually just give you a credit for the same amount of money that you put into another home. I think that's really cool too.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, literally the only downside of all of this is that 12% fee or, you know, 10% fee, whatever it was, because that's a lot of money, right? But at the same time, you know, going through a renovation and design for one of my places here, it's like a full-time job. And if you have enough money to potentially buy a second home, just as a vacation home, you probably don't have the time for a second job. So even though, you know, yeah, the holding costs are going to be quite high, it is literally an eighth, you know, or at least, you know, a sixth of what it would cost you on your own. It just doesn't make sense to have a second home that you're going to use 1 month of the year or a few weeks of the year and for it to just sit there. You know, you're probably going to have to hire a property manager anyways. So you might as well hire these guys for $100 a month. I think that's very fair to just let them deal with it all of it. So it's really just the upfront costs that are a lot.
Yeah, I really like that. And the $100 a month was great. And the fact that, you know, once a year, they're going to come up and say, well, we have this coming up or that coming up with if there's something major. And the fact that they'll handle it is huge because when you're going on vacation, you want to be on vacation. Because I know a lot of people that have second homes or small little vacation spots and they go on vacation and the first day or half a day that they're there, it's like you're working. So it's where's my vacation if I got to go take care of things around the house that, you know, have been neglected because I haven't been here?
Yeah, I'm assuming they have like a whole cleaning crew. So, you know, like when you show up, you just kind of move in and everything's set, right? So I think it's actually a great idea for anyone who wants to actually just have a second home and doesn't want it to be a terrible investment. I'm not that person, but if I was, you know, living in the US and I had a good job, you know, if you're making, you know, 200 grand a year and you don't want to fly to Asia or fly to Europe every, you know, once a month to go somewhere, but you want to just drive somewhere a few hours away or take a short flight and just, you know, bring friends, bring family, just have holidays in a nice, you know, nice place. Why not? Because 44 days a year is quite a bit. That's actually, you know, what, how many weeks is that, right? That's what, six weeks? You know, weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 weeks a year. And if you're doing 1 or 2 weeks at a time, you know, that's potentially, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 different trips.
Yeah, that's great. And especially if you work remotely too, I mean, most people can work from anywhere now if you have some type of office job. So you might as well do it from a place with, you know, a sick view. So
yeah. And, but I think that the main kind of benefit of this is for people to get into a $4 million house when they normally could have just afforded a $1 million house. I think that's what people need to do. It's kind of like leasing a Mercedes AMG when you probably should have just bought a Kia Stinger or something.
I think we can go even higher, Johnny. You sent me a picture earlier of a pretty sweet looking Bentley. We want to go have some on that.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think of it kind of like a jet sharing, right? A private jet is really expensive, but if you buy a 1/8 share with NextJets, you can still use it, you know, once a week or something. And you split the cost of the maintenance of the hangar rental, things that you would have had to pay anyways. And if you're not flying every single day, which, you know, most people aren't, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And the fact that at least here in California, the prices are so insane. If you can get into a sick house like that for, you know, less than $1 million, it's unheard of. And it's kind of a way to ball out, but more responsibly too. You're not just killing your whole budget, and you don't need this house for, you know, a whole year. So if you're only going to use it for 5-6 weeks anyways, even if you owned it outright, why take on that extra carrying cost when you could just share it with someone else and you don't have to deal with the other owners either? It's all through a third party. It could be anonymous. Like you said, I bet you anything, they have a lot of celebrities that do this that want to stay anonymous.
Yeah, I can see that. At first I thought it'd be a benefit to get to know each other and say like, yeah, you know, we own this place together. Like, let's, you know, maybe we can all just meet up sometimes and like, you know, share the place, you know, and just kind of get to know each other. But I realize that's probably a terrible idea. Like it in some cases, it might be cool, but in most cases, it'll just be a pain in the ass. And
yeah,
these people, they don't want to do it. Yeah. kind of interesting thing is I did the math. If each eight people get 44 days, that's actually only 352 days a year. So there's basically 13 days or 2 weeks that nobody's using it. I wonder what happens to those days. Do they just sit empty and they're just kind of, you know, days for maintenance or days for, you know, so you don't double book.
Or maybe there's like a 1 day transition to clean everything and get, you know, one group out and the other group in.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, because I can imagine that being annoying, right? Like, let's say the checkout time is 11 a.m. and your check-in might be 2 or 3 p.m. You know, what if you show up early and the people were still there?
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying, right? But I guess there'll be a cleaning crew that will be there for at least a few hours and says like, look, you know, you guys have to leave.
Yeah, and these are really big places too. It's not like, you know, I know you have a whole crew with, you know, Airbnb and stuff, but it's just a small apartment where... It's different, you know, cleaning a studio compared to, you know, it's 3 or 4,000 square foot home. You know, they need some time to do that.
Yeah, definitely. So I like it, man. I this is something that I was kind of just interested in. I'm actually the one who suggested Picasso. I think I heard about them on another podcast where they're talking about that that Napa Valley community being unhappy. And when I looked into it, I was like, man, actually, this seems like a really cool. kind of a new thing. And, you know, he's absolutely right, where unless somebody happens to be in the market for that specific $4 million home, you're not really competing with anyone else. And it's not like an Airbnb where every week there's different guests, people throwing parties. You know, it's really just, you know, 8 people or less, you know, co-owning a place. It's not that different from a family owning a place or a business owning a place and just letting, you know, the VPs or the C-level executives use it.
Yeah. And it's like the rental car thing, you know, like how do you treat your own car compared to a rental car? It's even though you only own a piece of this home, you're going to take a lot better care of it than you would just some random Airbnb. So I mean, I've dealt with bitchy neighbors and people that think they own the street because he talked about the parking, which is so ridiculous, but I can see it happening. So I think it's a lot less of an issue with something like this than a full on Airbnb, you know, luxury house.
Yeah. And honestly, if I was one of these shareholders, I wouldn't even tell people I wouldn't specifically say like, oh, it's a, you know, 1/8 share Picasso. I would just say, yeah, I own this place with a few other, you know, investors, and we have a property management company called Picasso. You know, I think that actually, yeah, that would have been the easier way to even sell it. Just, you know, not put it as a timeshare competitor or a vacation rental company, but really just what they are is they're basically a property management company that also just happens to be the acquisition company.
Yeah, totally. So I actually am searching for a second home. I'm looking to go to Vegas, but this would be really cool if I had a family, I think, but I'm looking more of the investment side too, because I want to Airbnb my place. And I think a lot of people, that was the only question or the main question I got from a few people, honestly, was can I Airbnb it? And that's literally the first thing they put on their site is no renting out, no Airbnbing. But if you had the type of job where you got to take care of clients and things like that, it'd be awesome to be able to send, you know, some of your best clients on a cool trip to this amazing house, things of that. I could see where this is really valuable, where, you know, it might not be a traditional investment, but it could definitely give you value. Whereas not traditional money wise, but where it could really help your business as well.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is instead of Sam having that property in the Carolinas, which he goes to maybe once a month, he could actually just have a Picasso.
Yeah, that would make sense. And it just sits empty too. He doesn't rent it out while he's gone. But yeah, you know.
And the same with his place in Barcelona. He's not going to rent it out either. So it is, it's literally for people like him who have money, who want a place of their own that they can go back to, you know, when they want. But at the same time, I mean, for Sam, I don't think it would work because he would want to just on a whim say, oh, you know what? I feel like going back to Barcelona right now, or feel like going to Carolinas. And if that week was booked, he would be pissed.
Yeah. So this is definitely for someone that's more on a regular schedule. Like I said, I think it's definitely leaning more towards families, kind of like we did Equity Estates, about a year ago now. And that was very similar to that, but also with concierge service, which I suggested to Austin that they should get with Picasso too. Because I think when you're bumping into this level of multi-million dollar houses or even over $1 million a share, you know, that level of people expect, you know, a little higher service. So I hope that they'll consider, you know, adding in some concierge services as well.
You know, I was thinking about that when you mentioned it. I think that it should definitely be some kind of optional service. I think the hard part is most of the properties are kind of spread out. So they're not in the same location. Like, you know, they can easily have one in Malibu because they have a bunch of properties there. But if they just have one or two properties in, you know, in a city, it doesn't make sense for them to have a in-person concierge. I guess they could have a virtual one. But I like to think of this kind of second home as literally just that, you know, like I would hate to pay an extra, you know, $300-$400 a month to have a concierge service that I don't really need or use. I obviously want the place to be clean, have someone come check it out to make sure nothing's broken. But aside from that, you know, like I don't mind picking up groceries on my way there, especially if I'm going to stay a week or two.
Yeah, I think it should be optional. But, you know, some people are just, they literally just want to fly in, get in a town car, get dropped off and be on vacation. So I could see a lot of people that are at this level just wanting to do that.
Yeah, I think a good kind of middle ground would be they should have some kind of virtual concierge. That way they could just literally have one person on their team that, you know, that's their job. And what they can do is they can have, you know, they can make it very easy. So like they can say, I see that your trip to, you know, Napa is coming up in 3 days, or to like, you know, Vail, Colorado is coming up in 3 days. Here's a list of the ride sharing apps to get from the airport. Here is the grocery delivery app. You can order and schedule the delivery here. You know, things like that, right? Where they can just make it really easy for you, so you don't have to try to figure it out yourself.
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. So what's your thought, Johnny? Are you looking to maybe buy into one of these, especially if they expand to some new areas?
I would absolutely do it if I was some kind of, you know, C-level executive with, you know, $300,000 salary living in one place in the US or something, and I just wanted a second home. I think it's actually a smarter idea and less headache than actually owning a second home, because you could still participate in the potential upside of it. But in my lifestyle, like, there's no way. Like, the only reason why I don't mind having more properties than one is the potential of being able to earn money from it while they sit empty. If my place in Kharkiv wasn't cash flowing and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, okay, it's okay, because it's not expensive. But if it was, you know, 600 grand or even 300 grand, I think I'd want to make money from it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think guys like us that, you know, have invested into assets, we want to see some type of return on it, especially when we're not using it. So I think that's a tough sell. But totally an executive at some large corporation or tech company or whatever it may be, where they have one main source of income and it's stable and they just need some time away, this is a really cool option.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, this is perfect for someone who works at Google, who just sleeps in, has a van or something, sleeps in his car, right? Or has like some, like, you know, small like studio apartment near the campus, spends, you know, 6 days a week at work and just kind of, does everything there. And then once in a while, like once a month, he just wants to drive up to, you know, up to Malibu or something with friends, you know, to just kind of get away and work remotely, you know, and surf and kind of just enjoy the beach. It would be perfect for someone like that.
Yeah, totally agree. So I think not for us, but there's a lot of people out there that would definitely find this interesting. So shout out Austin for coming on the show. Really appreciate the time with him. And if you want to check out more, it's Pacaso.com. That's Pacaso. He also mentioned the Pacaso app. I actually did not download it because I'm trying to spend less time on my phone. And this just sounds like it's really addicting, because I get into checking out properties and all that stuff on Zillow already enough. And then if you add this on top of it, I think I'd just be glued to my phone all day. So I actually avoided the app, but I hear it's really cool.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening in, and stay tuned for the next episode, which is going to be a big one. It's going to be number 200. And Sam and I are going to be celebrating by kind of going back in time and reminiscing a little bit about how it all started, sharing what we're up to, what our future plans are, as well as revealing some of the biggest investments and changes that both of us or either of us have made in a long time. So that'll be a Patreon-only exclusive. If you want to support the show, just go to investlikeaboss.com, click on support the show, join a Patreon as low as $5 a month, and let us help us, you know, make another 100 episodes, because without you guys, this wouldn't be around.
Come on, Johnny, give us a little tease. I know what Sam's been up to behind the scenes. We've been talking a lot about his moves. He's made crazy moves. So if anything, just to join Patreon to hear about what Sam's been doing, give us a little tease what you've been up to, Johnny.
Well, for the first time in probably a year or two, I'm actually sharing my entire net worth kind of spreadsheet, where it's broken down with exactly the, like, to the penny, how much I have in each account. And that was actually kind of fun, because even Sam had no idea. Even Sam has no idea. So it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Can't wait to check that out. Patreon.com/investlikeaboss, or just go to investlikeaboss.com, click become a patron, and not only will you get the quarterly updates, but I think about 1 week from the time this episode airs, we'll be doing our second Boss Insider. It is going to be with CEO of Rad Diversified REIT, Dutch Mendenhall. We've had him on the show a couple times. Really fun guy. I'm super excited for this. Sunday, October 24th. That is going to be an awesome call.
Yeah. And actually, on the day that this airs, the Q3 update, it will be live in the Patreon. It'll be video and audio, so you can actually see our screen shares and everything. So if you listen to this and you're a Patreon or you want to sign up, just go there right now, because it's already there.
Awesome. So much stuff going on with iLab. We're going to have episodes every single week for you guys. Hope you enjoyed this one. If you got any thoughts, you know, hit us up in the Boss Lounge, leave a comment in Patreon, whatever you want to do, or let us know if you bought one of these Picasso places, because they are some sick homes, because I want at least like 1 week, please.
Yeah. Or, you know, just let it. They're like 5, 6, 7 bedrooms. So if you want to invite us to come hang out, let us know. And we'll make a trip out there.
Totally. Let's make that a plan. All right. Anything else before we get out of here, Johnny?
No, it's been good. So look forward to talking to you guys in the 200th episode. So thanks again and see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.